Colonel Collins, Reel 3. Now, before we continue with your with the account of your training, which, by the way, we've discovered was number 11 County Primary Training Centre, not 32. That's just to drop that in. We found a document. Since my last visit, you've had time to look up a few things. And two pointers from your early life you wanted to talk about. Let's look at the first one first, which is an unusual youth organisation, or unusual to me, that you were a member of, called the Regnal League. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yes. If you remember, you asked me whether I was a scout and that sort of thing, and I went off on a tangent about the church. But in fact, there was an active group here of an organisation known as the Regnal League, R-E-G-N-A-L. I don't know if it still exists, but it had a headquarters in London. And it was a movement of youth seeking fullness of life in the individual and the community through whole development of body. I'm reading from the little booklet here. And we had a very good man here, actually a local bank manager, John Ango. And he led the local lads, of whom I was one, in this sort of thing. And we met weekly, I think, certainly fairly frequently. And the plan was someone prepared a paper on some topic, and then we had a little discussion, and then we had a cup of tea or something and played table tennis and that sort of thing, and occasionally met out of doors.
Roughly when would you have joined, or how old would you have been?
Well, I see that I've got a paper here that I wrote in September 1939, so that's shortly before the war. So it would have been in my sort of upper school years, maybe even after, well, I was in the sixth form school, that was the sort of time, 39, 40, I can't say exactly when I joined.
And what you've got it in for, what was that paper?
Well, that was called Secondary Education for All. That was one topic that I had to write a paper on, and I had to do one on vices at one stage. And what I was particularly apropos our previous discussion, I remember you asked me if I was very much aware of the approach of the war and the early conduct of the war, etc. And I said, well, I don't remember now being particularly au fait with it and that sort of thing, but I see that in February 1940, I've come across my diary from 1940, and I see that on the 13th of February 1940, I went to Regnal's and gave a paper on the conduct of war by the present government. So I must have done a bit of reading and include myself a bit on that. So, there were things like that. Well, there was a tremendous lot going on here. This diary also refers to air raid warnings and that sort of thing, and their frequency, day and night.
Now, the other point from your time in Bodmin, I think, that you wanted to cover was that you feel you may have given a slightly false impression of your school life and why it wasn't so good for you and why you felt you didn't get a lot out of it. This was down to your age, I think.
Well, I'm inclined to think so. Perhaps it's only an excuse, I know, but I've come across some old school magazines and my school reports since we last spoke. And I see it. I had a rather checkered career. I mean, for quite a lot of the time, I was the top of the class. But then I sunk, as most children do, or born, as you know, around about 14 or 15. But throughout, and particularly at the beginning, I note that I was considerably younger than my contemporary, my peers, if you like. And I mean, I think I looked up something there where I was about 2 years and 2 months younger than the average age of the form. So I think possibly that I was, probably rather immature and perhaps a slightly jaundiced view in my memory of the school was due to the fact that, I perhaps didn't put as much into it or get as much out of it as I would have done had I been a bit older, or had I been perhaps developed and encouraged a little bit better, and due allowance being made for my age. So, but I didn't want to cast a slight on the school, which I think probably did a pretty good job.
Well, we'll now go back to our other thing about your a typical day we were running through at number 11 County Primary Training Centre, which is the Bodmin Barracks, the DCLI. But at this point was just a general service training thing. You were in platoon as a companies of about 300, I think.
That sort of number, yes. Each one representing an intake, yes.
And we got through to the day to in the morning we were just looking at the sort of training you did, and we come really first to basic drill. Did you learn much at basic drill, or had you really covered that at your OTC?
Well, I think I must have done all the rudiments at OTC, and again I've come across a photograph of us all in uniform at the OTC, and I mean it's quite a we look quite a sort of presentable squad, not just long-haired students and all that, properly dressed in uniform. And when we were a properly formed body of young men, so I think we learned all the essential for the drill. Obviously, we didn't learn the big ceremonial method, but we didn't do that at the primary training centre anyway, so there was no call for it in wartime.
Did you enjoy drill still? I mean,
uncomplaining sort of chap, maybe. I didn't really mind the drill.
So foot drill was one thing, and another thing is sort of the aspects of fitness training, which we could look at various aspects. The first one is basic PT. Would you have PT sessions, physical training?
Regular sessions in the gym. I can visualise the gym now, and the building is still there and being converted into a swimming pool now. By the way, the town swimming pool.
What facilities did they have for you in the gym?
Well, I can't remember exactly, but it would have been just basic wall bars and medicine balls and ropes. And whether there were beams there or not, I can't be sure. I would think probably not. But we had to do, things like boxing and so on. I was made to box.
What did you think of that?
Not very much, really, but I had my arm twisted. My only qualification for it was that I was the right weight to fit in particular slot in the team, which is one of the very lighter weights, obviously. We did some cross-country running as well, and then that sort of culminated in sort of intercompany runs, and my time at University College Exeter, where I'd been a member of the cross-country team, I don't think I mentioned that previously, but it's come back to me. Used to run, so I did quite a lot of training there, and so I was well versed in cross country running, and so I was able to shine a bit when it came to the intercompany run.
I think you came certainly in A versus D company. You've got a certificate that you were first.
We won the intercompany thing, and I was the first man home out of the two companies. I was about 500 runners.
Would they do route marches as well?
Not doing long route marches, no. I don't remember doing. Well, we weren't hardened up for that sort of thing. That came later, back to school and so on.
You were obviously a fair. I'm judging by that anyway. A fairly fit young chap. Was your level of fitness generally above, or the rest of the ordinary recruits?
I wouldn't like to say that. I really can't. I can't say that. I don't suppose it was. I think for my size and weight, I was pretty fit, pretty active.
But so most of the rest seemed to be.
Oh yes, I think they're all much for muchness in that regard. There were one or two people, with two left feet sort of thing.
Would they get picked on? By either the.
Not by the other soldiers so much. No, I don't think we all felt we were. We'd all been dragooned in there and. Because we were all conscript, you see. There weren't any volunteers among this lot. And I don't think.
Would the instructors pick on anybody?
I mean, obviously, NCOs and warrant officers get a bit fed up with chaps who, swing the wrong arm when they're marching and that sort of thing. But it's all part of the game, really.
Now, what about weapons training? Again, it's come back to you that. That you did a little more, perhaps, Exeter in the OTC than you'd remembered last time, but...
Yes, I did. We must have done quite a lot there. And I remember at the primary training centre, where, incidentally, after a few weeks, I was made a sort of section leader and given a red armband to wear. And I think, obviously, because I had a lot of the background training from the OTC, and... so when it came to things like weapon training, that sort of thing, I was pretty well versed, and I found it, you know, it came to me very easily, and I could remember some of the mnemonics and things like that, which I'd known before. And,
do you remember any of them now?
I do, yes. I remember about, I remember this particularly, because I could remember it, and the sergeant couldn't, and he always had to look it up, you see. But it's about the characteristics of a good fire position for, a soldier on the ground. And, the characteristics, the mnemonic was that it has to be brief. That's B-R-I-E-F, and I remember now. It's bulletproof, room for free use of the weapon, inconspicuous, easy to move from, and having a good field of fire. And then I just never forget that. And I used to be always called upon to trot this out, because the other people couldn't remember this.
What about actually learning to shoot the rifle? You hadn't actually fired things, as far as you remember, at Exeter.
I don't ever remember going to the firing range. We may have gone to a miniature range.
What? How did they take you through learning to fire the Lee Enfield? Do you remember now?
Now I have to say I can't really remember. Incidentally, I didn't have a Lee Enfield rifle. I had some other. Was it a Pattern 14 or something like that? It may have been an American import.
Not a Ross.
It could have been a Ross. I remember that name as well. I think when I came to fire my, my company, fire my qualification shoot, I don't think I had a Lee Enfield, a short magazine Lee Enfield, and I had one of those other rifles.
You were, again, a certificate we've got, you were a company shot,
yes.
Which out of 300 is going quite well. What do you think made you a good shot? I mean, people say different things, steadiness, eyesight, various other things, or just doing what you're told, actually obeying the thing. What made you a good shot, do you think?
It was probably luck as much as anything, I should think, because, I don't know, I was fairly cool and understood what I was trying to do and took the correct aim. I probably lucky and had a pretty good rifle as well, one never knows all of these things, and they just all came together, and I happened to get a higher score than anybody else. I mean, I wasn't subsequently. I was never a great rifle shot. I could sort of manage to keep up the reasonable standard, but I did competitive shooting.
You weren't a marksman.
No, I wasn't a marksman. Well, I'm a technic, in name a marksman according to the army classification, but I wasn't a competitive shot.
Now, what about the other weapons? were you introduced to the Bren?
Yes, really, yes. Yes, and, one was taught the care and cleaning of it, and stripping, and various drills, what to do with it when the magazine runs out, or if the weapon jammed, or if it needed more gas, and all that sort of thing.
And you'd practice these things?
Oh, yes, absolutely ad nauseam, yes.
Stripping it down.
Do them against the clock and so on, yes.
Would you actually do this business of stripping weapons down blindfolded? Did it go that far?
I don't actually remember whether we did that at the primary training centre. We might well have done. I can't remember. I mean, that's the sort of thing that's done, partly to get the stand up, also partly to make it a bit of fun and give people extra interest. And so on.
What about firing the Bren? Did you get a chance there?
Well, I suppose that classification should probably included light machine gun as well as rifle, I would think it probably did.
Did you get any experience with any of the other light machine guns? Well, or the old one, really, the Lewis?
No.
They'd moved on properly.
Funny, well, they were still in service. Well, certainly the Vickers was. In fact, curiously enough, when I eventually joined a battalion, which we'll come to later, I'm sure, first job I was given was in charge of the Vickers section.
Had you seen it before, though?
Well, I'd probably seen it, but I don't think I'd been properly trained on it.
What about the submachine guns? Did they give you any experience with them?
I suppose the Sten was in production then. I can't be absolutely sure. In recruit training, you had a good sort of basic weapon training. Obviously, this was built upon. I mean, those people who were going into the infantry needed more of that than people who were going into the artillery, let's say.
So you concentrate mostly, from the sound of it, on the rifle and stripping Brent, and not so much of the Sten and the Thompson.
Well, I can't remember him now. I've gone back a long way.
Fair enough. What about the hand grenade?
Well, I do remember going onto the range and throwing a hand grenade. We, you know, each person had to throw a hand grenade. Proper precautions and that sort of thing. I think that was just to give one a bit of confidence, you know, about the weapon.
Have they taught you how to arm it and the rest of it?
Yes, yes. I did all the drills beforehand, so providing you kept your head cool, you know, you didn't get too nervous about it.
Did it make you nervous? Some people didn't like the mills.
Well, I remember being particularly nervous. One was a little bit sort of apprehensive because I knew the power of the thing. And, you know, one was careful not to make a mistake, not to let the handle fly off, you know, before you were in the firing point and that sort of thing.
Did you practice throwing it, and did you use the round arm action that people...
I think we did, yes.
Would you practice throwing a dummy first?
Well, throwing blinds, yes, throwing unarmed grenades, probably definitely. Yes. They're painted white, as I remember.
And about how far do you reckon you could throw them, Mills?
Not as far as you would think, but honestly. I mean, I think if you could throw it about 20 yards, that would be... it depends how strong you are and how big, I think. But,
about 20 yards was about
you. Bear in mind, you're not doing it sort of on a, like a person putting a shot on an athletics ground. You know, you're cramped into a safety hole and that sort of thing, and trying to give a minimum exposure of yourself.
Bayonet training. There's two sorts of things. One seems to have been the charging of sacks, and the other one is actual bayonet fighting.
Yes.
Somebody else with a bayonet. Did you do both them, or?
Yes, we did both of those. All part of the skill at arms, it was known as, and. You know, you had to do the lunge with the, and then withdraw the thing and run past the target, the sack, as you say, the suspended sack to represent a body. Which nobody ever, at least, certainly not in my experience, never actually went around sticking bayonets in people. Not in the war that we fought, anyway.
Were they still encouraging people to do a lot of shouting while they were doing that exercise?
Yes, yes. And that is a very, you know, that's a very, I found from experience later that, you know, you dominate your enemy by making noise. Interesting to notice now, I mean, the villains do that now, don't they? Some of these raiders and houses and that sort of thing, on banks, they shout at people to intimidate them. And it's loud and keeps still. So, you know, I think that all comes from.
So, the actual shouting and the aggression that you were encouraged to show during that exercise was valuable outside of just bayonets. It was just something useful in attack.
It certainly was useful. I mean, we were trained to do it when you charged. I mean, once you're exposed or revealed to the enemy, then the bigger shell is rather like the sort of vocal equivalent of the old red coat, isn't it? I mean, and the bearskin, the sort of the tall hat, you know, the bigger threat you can appear, the more likely you are to intimidate the enemy.
And what about the actual bayonet fighting, that sort of thing? Did you practice that with each other, or how did you go about it? Or did you do much of it?
I think we did it with sticks, I can't remember. I don't think we could have done much of that. The main thing was, you know, the thrust of the bayonet against the supposed man target, as you. And then, you know, carrying on to the objective, as it were.
What about mortars, the infantry mortars, the 2-inch and the 3-inch? Did you get them?
Yes, we will have done the 2-inch mortar. In fact, I was just reaching over to look at that photograph there. I'm sure there's a 2-inch mortar in that photograph that we had when I was in the OTC. So we certainly would have been trained with that, yes.
Would you actually get to fire it? Because it's rather more difficult to fire, I should imagine.
More difficult than what? Than the rifle, you mean?
In the sense of you need more space.
You need more space. You've got to have a field firing range. I don't know. I can't remember when I first fired a live mortar round. Probably not in primary training.
What about anti-tank weapons, either the boys or the Piat?
Yeah, so we had that, and I have fired both of those, and did at quite an early stage, but I really can't remember exactly. You see, some of these things one did in later training, and in officer cadet training or at battle school.
So it's a bit difficult to put your finger on when. What did you think of the boys?
Damn heavy.
Did you think it was any good?
With the Piat. Well, we were told what its capabilities were. And, I mean, like all these things, it's a trade-off. You've got a certain amount of weight and a certain amount of performance. You know, I think we had a degree of competence in it.
And what about the Piat?
Well, similarly. I mean, the Piat, being a chemical, with a chemical warhead, had a certain penetrative power into armour and that sort of thing. But I must say, it was jolly heavy to carry around. And, I well remember when we were flying through the mud and up the hill and down there in Italy, and where there weren't many tanks around in the early part of my campaign there anyway, when we came under fire, and the first thing the soldiers dropped in the ditch was the Piat.
We'll definitely come back to that, that point. What about then, we're still sort of going to sort of training sessions you'd be doing. Did you do any tactical training? I think you mentioned you did. You know, just advanced formations, that sort of thing.
I particularly remember, I was still at the primary training centre.
Yes.
I particularly remember doing night training, a night exercise. Because, as you know, as I think I said at the beginning, I lived here in this house in Bodmin. And the barracks is only a mile away from here. So when we went there on the night exercise, I knew exactly the road and the route. And I could have done it with my eyes shut anyway. And I remember the sergeant being worried that I was going off too fast in front and I would get lost. And I was sort of faintly amused at that because I knew there was no possibility whatever I was going to get lost.
What sort of thing would you do in these exercises?
Well, what you do is... you have normally the people under training maybe in two groups, or the people under training and then the instructors are at a distance. And one goes to position, it takes up a concealed position, and then the instructors perform a series of, making certain noises or certain actions to represent certain things that might occur at night, and then one's trained to identify and locate them, to get some idea of how far away they are, and then discuss it afterwards. And also training on moving silently at night, and of course route finding at night. I mean, there's a lot of aspects to it, and very important too.
That's all a lot of the patrolling style exercises for that. What about actual attack exercises or battle training? Did you do much of that?
No, not at the primary training centre. Again, we certainly did night attacks at the battle school.
Right, I'll come on to that then. So, now that we've been looking at a day, so you'd spend the morning training on any of these things that we've been discussing. What sort of dinner would you get, or lunch?
I can't remember with any clarity, except that I remember, chunks of bread and chunks of foul-tasting margarine. Of course, there was no butter available. Plenty of hot sweet tea. And we must have had, cooked vegetables and meat.
And then afternoon, more training, I would presume, most days.
Yes. I mean, the striking thing about the meal, though, of course, that you weren't provided with cutlery and china when you got to the cookhouse. You took your knife, fork, and spoon, and probably your mess tin with you. You put your food in that, and you cleaned it yourself afterwards.
So,
there's more training in the afternoon. I can't remember the actual routine of the day. There must have been, some sort of pattern to it.
So when the day finished, I mean, were you were confined to barracks the first 3 weeks. So, what would you do in the, you know, in the evening?
Well, I suppose we had an athy canteen, but I mean, most importantly, we had to prepare our kit for the next day. You know, we had to make sure that all your equipment was clean and blankoed and that sort of thing, and boots clean and polished.
Were there any old soldiers around to teach you some of the tricks, or just how to do it?
Well, not as conscripts, no. They were later on, and there was Octave and so on, there were old soldiers there.
So you were left.
We had quite a, you know, I think I mentioned before, we had Lance Corporal in charge of our billet. He was quite a happy chap. And, so I suppose he got by somehow or another. I don't say we reached a very high standard. It wasn't like Sandhurst or anything like that.
And would you have a proper, you had a morning sort of bed area inspection, would you have a proper kit inspection once a week?
Well, I suppose we did. I mean, I can't remember the frequency.
So, that's basically the routine. Were you allowed time off at the weekend, or what would you do at the weekend? Anything special?
Well, I suppose we wrote letters. We didn't go out of barracks. I can't remember if we had perhaps a church parade in the cookhouse or something like that.
Was there any sport laid on? Or just boxing and cross country?
Those were sort of one-off events, the boxing. I don't remember. I suppose we must have had some. It was pretty intensive training. I don't remember time hanging heavy on one's hand, you know.
Now, you'd been made a section leader.
Yeah.
Had you started to think of the possibilities of becoming an officer or an NCO? But, I mean, had you thought of this at this early stage? You'd only been in the army 5 minutes, but...
Well, once again, I have to be careful what I say, because I've said previously I don't remember things like that being in my consciousness, and then I found records which proved otherwise. I mean, looking back now, I don't remember a sort of plotting my career ahead in any sort of way at all. I was just getting on, you know, from day to day with the job in hand. As a matter of fact, when I was sent for and told that I was to go off to the pre-octu.
Now, was that while you were on your first course?
That was
number 11.
As we approached the end of that primary training period, yes.
So what happened to that? Yes, tell me about that. We'll move on to that then. You were called in.
Yes, well, I can't remember actually, you know, the interview or whatever, but it became known to me, and yes, because I joined the army, I remember, on the 20th of August, 42, and I was commissioned exactly 6 months later to the day, on the 20th of February, 43. So, and I was at the OCTU for 4 months, so that means to say that in the 2 months, about 8 or 9 weeks, that must have encompassed the primary training and the pre-octu.
Now, where did you were sent for pre-octu training? That was like an assessment as well, of whether you were good enough to go on, wasn't it?
It was, really.
Where did you do it?
Rootham in Kent, just on the below the escarpment there, which I was ingrained, weighed on anybody's memory who was there, because we were made to run up that escarpment, which was a killer. So, I mean, you were really...
And what was this unit actually called?
It was called pre...
Just pre-octu. Did it have a number or name or anything?
I can't remember being called anything. It's very well known, because you were only there, I think, for a fortnight, except those who stayed on for driver training, but... MT training. But, well, we were only there, I think it was a fortnight, and it was non-stop and really, you know, really tough. You were really tested.
Now, this was still general service training.
Yes.
You weren't in a regiment?
No, no.
You weren't even infantry yet?
Really, no. And,
so what would this... Could you give us an idea of what this training consisted of?
Well, I mean, it was about the nearest thing to the glasshouse, I would think. Without being punishment, because people didn't have to stay there, I suppose, but it really... It was really a pretty baptism of nearly, I guess, sort of fire. Not a fire, but in, speaking metaphorically there. And we were, you know, it was pretty tough.